Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich savings plan.
But first, caring for a loved one or needing care yourself is a situation all of us will face sometime in our lives. Many of us know how difficult providing care can be and how expensive it can be if you need to pay a professional to do it for you, which is why today's policy statement on care from the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission will be of interest to so many around the country. Among the 40 recommendations is a demand that there be universal access to quality care services guaranteed now by the state, and that the provision of care through nursing homes and creches and the like should be deprivatised. I'm joined by the Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, Sinead Gibney. Now, Sinead, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Cormac.
It's a big call. It's a big demand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it's just one of, as you say, over 40 recommendations. So really just part of the picture that we're trying to put forward as what is required, which we believe is a cultural shift in how we view care. And that deprivatisation part is just a simple part of it. But really, I suppose what we're trying to call is that care is a human rights and equality issue. There are a lot of assumptions in society around care that we really need to challenge. For example, the passive recipient nature of care that we see in older people and people with disabilities, whereas actually those are groups who provide a lot of care as well as receiving a lot of care. Also that because of the way we all, as you say, need or provide care across our life cycle, we have to find ways to protect it as a provision of service, if you like, as a vital role that people fulfil, which currently isn't the case because most care is either unpaid or underpaid and mostly carried out by women. And that has a knock-on effect then, of course, in terms of gender equality. So it's a really big piece. And I suppose as a Human Rights and Equality Institute, we have long commented on this, as has our predecessor bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's time, I think, what we wanted to do with this is put it together in one policy statement and really, you know, provide these recommendations for decision makers who will be shaping care strategy and policy over the next while.
Okay, so that's why it's being done now. But the reason it's remarkable, your call for, and let me read that again, a demand that there be universal access to quality care services guaranteed by the state. It's a startling recommendation, really. And maybe the reason it is startling is that we are far removed from that. People are having to scrounge around using every last penny of the family might have, the extended family might have, to pay for care for an elderly person or a disabled person
or childcare,
yeah. Quite simply. Another mortgage is what an awful lot of people term it. And the fact that we're so far removed begs the question, can we get there? Is it practically possible?
Well, I think we have to aspire to these visions. And at the moment, I mean, as you say, it really is quite a shift. And I would position it as for people to maybe just help people understand what we're trying to say is, if we were as a society and as a state to view care as a public good, we would position it alongside education and health. And I'm not saying that those systems and those sectors don't have their issues, but we view them in a certain way. We view them, for example, as not-for-profit being the key model that informs the delivery of those public goods. And that's what we're trying to say that care needs. And that's currently not the situation.
No, and you're talking about the deprivatisation of care services in the state, aren't you? What
exactly
does that mean practically?
Well, what we've seen is a huge increase in the privatisation of care services in the state and for-profit models of care provision. And what we're trying to say is that that doesn't work, because in a for-profit environment, increasing profit requires the minimisation of costs, and that ultimately impinges on the quality of services that are provided and the conditions of work in which people...
Is that empirical?
Yes, absolutely. So we have, there's a meta study from 2009, which talks about looks at a huge range of research in this area, and ultimately says that for-profit models have a lower quality of service than not-for-profit models. And there's further research specifically in the Irish system as well.
When you say to deprivatise care services in Ireland, what is the Human Rights Commission asking the government to do? Now, are you asking that if a private nursing home, for example, is put up for sale, that the state buy it and nationalise it? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, we appreciate that this would be a very long process. But what we're trying to say is that states should prioritise that deprivatisation of care services and really invest in a publicly funded and non-profit care infrastructure, which would include things like cooperatives, for example, and we've seen some really interesting models emerge in that space, and social enterprises, and ensure that gradual and sustainable transition of services. So again, like, so the HSE, for example, they provide and manage care services, but they do so by contracting out to for-profit institutions. And what we're trying to say is that that shouldn't be the case, that actually we should be looking at not-for-profit models of care provision.
Well, you're trying to get the state to swim against the tide here, because be it in mental health or homeless services or health services, the state is more and more licensing out to charities or for-profit organisations or private organisations or entities, essentially. But you're asking the state to reverse here.
Well, it's not really the type of, I mean, just to be clear, we're not suggesting that private companies couldn't provide the services, but they should be doing so in a not-for-profit model. That's the difference. And I appreciate that it might be swimming against the tide, but in all of those sectors you've just mentioned, and certainly in the care sector, it's not working. And what we're seeing is tinkering around the edges, where the, for example, in the early years sector, we're seeing very incremental wage improvements and conditions of work for people in that sector. And similarly in home care with recent announcements around that. But they are really just tinkering at what is a much bigger problem. And that's why we are calling for a much broader and bigger shift in public attitude and state attitude towards this, towards a public good model for care.
You say a shift in public attitude. The,
yes.
The public has to be educated as well.
I believe
opinion.
So. Oh, yeah.
So how does the public need to shift its attitude?
Well, I think as a society, and Ireland isn't unique here, but I do think it's quite emphasised here, women undertake much of the care in society, and we do so in unpaid care and also in underpaid care. Mm-hmm. And migrant women in particular are overrepresented in underpaid care work, domestic care and so on. So we have an economy that is built on this unspoken contribution of women primarily, but also men, of course, in unpaid and underpaid care. And until we recognise that, and still until we start valuing care properly and really appreciating it for what it is, we won't be able to see that cultural shift. And I think it's a really important area also when we think about automation, for example, and the displacement of labour that's coming down the tracks, because actually care is something you cannot automate, and it is a sector that we should be investing in and providing opportunities through state-led interventions.
It's funny the way you trigger memories of stories that we've covered in this programme. When you talk about the unpaid carer or the underpaid carer, it's very often a family member caring for a loved one with very little or no respite. Mm-hmm. And it just begs the question, how can anyone continue that burden of work? And it's very physical and emotionally draining sometimes without respite, because you're heading towards burnout, aren't you? And maybe that's the kind of why there's a great need for a shift in how we view these things. The big question, though, is, and I'm sure all those people listening would say, yes, this is absolutely what we need. The big question for government, though, is the practical nature of this. How do we pay for this? How much would it cost to move towards this model of care?
Well, I think, I mean, you're right to call it out, because that individual experience is so important to remember when we're talking about these big policies and this big cultural shift that we're looking towards. Because it is, for example, parents who care for their whole lifetime virtually for children, for example, with intellectual disabilities. Or it is the lone parents who are so isolated in society.
And worry what will happen when they pass away then.
Exactly,
child, yeah.
Exactly. So there's so much on a day-to-day basis in how this affects people. This is a policy statement. It doesn't cost it out, if you like, and it's not proposing to do so. But I would say the care is a cost. At the moment, we're just not recognising that it is a cost to individuals who take it on in that unpaid and underpaid way. So it's time for the state to step up. And there's a European level obligation here. So the European Commission has already set out its European care strategy. And as part of that, there is a requirement for the state to set in place its own strategy by the end of this year on long-term provision of care. So there's a real emphasis at European Union level that care is a human rights and equality issue, and looking at it in that life cycle rather than, for example, just looking at the childcare sector or just looking at nursing homes, thinking about it as a life cycle and how we all access and give care throughout our life.
Imagine every family in the country, if they could be released of the emotional burden of the care that's being provided at the moment and the financial burden as well. And if there were to be a universal access to quality care services guaranteed by the state, I just wonder how that would shift quality of life for the caregiver and the person receiving the care as well, most crucially. Anyway, it's a topic of conversation prompted by the Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, Sinead Gibney. Thank you very much indeed. 51551.